This is The Dial from Aspen Public Radio. In-depth conversations about current Roaring Fork Valley issues with the reporters who know them best. I'm Kristen Kay. It's June 26th. The Spotlight Health portion of the Aspen Ideas Festival wrapped up last weekend. The program tracks this year included caregiving, moonshots, and the brain. There was also one called Intersections. And if you think about intersections, that's where you really have to pay attention when you're driving. It's not just about you anymore. There's an entire other path that you have to consider. Environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart Severy was there for several discussions on that track, including one called Human Health and the Planet. That is a critical intersection. Rather than thinking of the health of the planet and the health of our species as parallel streets, what happens when we look at the place where they come together? What happens if we stand in the middle of that intersection? I spoke with Elizabeth about that relationship between human health and planet Earth. Can you frame the basic concern about health and planet Earth that you've heard about?
Yeah, so the very basic problem presented is that our planet is sick, and basically that is making people sick as well. So for example, we know that the planet is getting hotter, and this leads to all kinds of environmental issues like wildfire and other things, and people are getting sick from this in rather obvious ways like heat stroke, but also from things that maybe aren't as apparent, like the nutritional content of food is diminished when that food is grown in heat. So the panel included researchers and policy experts who head up work in a relatively new field called planetary health. And the idea here is that we have to change the way we use resources and consider a rather cyclical problem, which is that human impacts on the planet affect the Earth, and then that in turn affects human health.
So what's being done? Can you give us an example of how this way of thinking about the interrelationship between humans and the Earth is playing out?
Yeah, so part of this will be done through policy work and creating a framework for how to develop countries and communities in environmentally responsible ways. So the idea is to do it right the first time. This happens in developing countries, like there's a lot of development in Southeast Asia where areas might look to hydropower for electricity, which involves building dams. And when you build dams, it can and often does affect the fisheries. And in many communities, fish is a major source of protein. So then that means considering hydropower should also raise questions about nutrition. If fisheries impacted, people in the local communities would no longer have access to high-quality protein, and that would impact human health. So it means addressing environmental issues from a more holistic standpoint.
And part of that means considering the choices we make that impact the planet that also affect our health. And I understand that you attended another discussion about how environmental factors impact children's health.
Yeah, so this panel was headed up by Philip Landrigan, who's a professor of preventative medicine and pediatrics. He was also involved in the EPA's 1976 decision to remove lead from gasoline. One thing that he mentioned was that the decision to create the EPA in 1970, which was certainly positive in so many ways, also had the unintended consequence of separating the environment from public health. When those two are really so closely connected, and his point was kind of that those two fields, the environment and public health, should be viewed as one. So it's a similar concept to planetary health. His talk focused on environmental toxins and the impacts that these have on children's health and development. Certainly, he started with talking about the huge success of removing lead from gasoline. So lead's a neurological toxin. It affects the brain and it can lower IQ. And removing lead from gasoline eventually meant a 90% reduction in the blood lead levels in children. And Landrigan says this correlates to an average of 3 to 5 more points on IQ scores.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's one thing millennials have going for them. They're smarter than their parents.
So what else are you hearing about current concerns about environmental toxins?
Well, lead is still a major concern, and we heard about it really recently after high levels of lead were found in the drinking water in Flint, Michigan. In addition to that, there are researchers looking into childhood diseases that are on the rise to investigate whether environmental factors might be a cause. So autism is on the rise. Childhood cancers are actually on the rise as well. And they're looking at how environmental toxins may be influencing those things. There's more research needed into pesticides, which aren't thoroughly tested for toxicity. And so there are all kinds of things that would terrify any new mom or really anybody.
Like what?
Well, so especially for parents, children are much more susceptible to neurotoxins, and all mattresses are sprayed, actually all furniture that we put in our homes are sprayed with fire retardant. That's required. And those fire retardants have chemicals in them that aren't thoroughly tested, but it's highly suspected that those toxins are carcinogenic and maybe have other adverse effects that we just don't know about because they aren't really studied. He also talked about GMO foods, and he's a scientist, so he's not opposed to genetic modification of food. But basically, the idea that Landergan brought up was that when Monsanto and these other seed companies mapped the genome, the plant genome, they could have genetically modified it in really any number of ways. So they could have made it so that corn could grow in salt marshes, or that corn could be more resistant to heat. But instead, what they chose to do was modify that genome to make corn resistant to pesticides and to a certain type of pesticide that Monsanto also sells. So now what you get is genetically modified foods. Those crops can be sprayed with pesticides 3, 4, 5 times a growing season. And Landergan said, basically, if you're buying foods that have been genetically modified, it's very likely that there's much more, that there's a higher, that there are more chemicals in those foods.
Interesting. So Elizabeth, what's the most important idea that you can share with us that you took from this session?
Well, both panels and more talked about the need for more research, which is pretty much the standard for scientists talking about their work. But really, there is a push to quantify the health impacts of environmental damage and environmental toxins. We need strong data to understand these things to lead to better policy and better decision making. And on top of that, scientists need to figure out how to communicate these impacts to the world. So that's really a storytelling issue. People need to be able to understand the impacts in a concrete way to really understand the impacts to their own lives.
Well, maybe the seed of that is being planted here in Aspen, or was planted here in Aspen last week.
I think so.
This is The Dial from Aspen Public Radio. That was environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart Severy talking about the Spotlight Health Conference this year and the focus on the relationship between the environment and human health. If you're interested in listening to sessions from the 2017 Aspen Ideas Festival, Aspen Public Radio is broadcasting live this week. You can check out that schedule or listen to the recorded talks by going to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Here's what else is going on in your valley. The tree farm development in the Mid-Valley has been the subject of fierce debate, particularly over the last several months. Eagle County's commissioners are nearing a decision which could come at their meeting tonight. And this is obviously a big week for the Aspen Institute with the 2017 Aspen Ideas Festival, but they are also launching a speaker series in honor of Supreme Court Associate Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. She's actually a lifetime trustee of the Aspen Institute. The 4-year speaker series dedicated to her will focus on her passions of judicial independence and civic engagement. You've been listening to The Dial. I'm Kristen Kay. To hear more extended interviews or to listen to more local programs like Valley Roundup or Curated, go to aspenpublicradio.org.